Hello and welcome to the EV Cafe Takeaway, a podcast focused on the zero emission future that we all hope for. Every week I'm joined by one of the wonderful EV Cafe team, and this week it just doesn't get any better. Saz, aka Sarah Sloman. Welcome, Saz.
Was I the only one available?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought so. No, thank you for having me. I'm really looking forward to this one.
Well, because it's always a treat, isn't it, to be able to speak to some of the innovators, pioneers and collaborators that we find in our industry, all pushing in this same direction. And this week is no exception. We have got the wonderful Chris Pritchett from Shoesmiths. Chris, very much welcome. You are partner at Shoesmiths. I have no idea what that really means in the big world of legal stuff. So why don't you start by telling me what does a partner do at Shoesmiths?
What does a partner do? Well, on the plus side, we own the business between 230 or so of us, all split into bits, and we kind of own it. Theoretically, if it all goes wrong, it's our fault, and that's bad news for everybody in my family and that lives in the house. It's essentially you're an owner of the business and a co-owner of the business, and that's quite exciting. It means we get to decide on things like strategy and how we go about doing things. But ultimately, the buck tends to stop with us. So it can be quite scary. But, have to back yourself and back your people around you and people you know.
But this, I mean, we'll come back to, you know, what you do within Shoesmiths in a little while, if that's okay. But sure. When I looked at your profile and everything that sort of is your backstory that I can see, because of course there's always the bits that we can't see, and those are the bits that we really want. but it's been very much a sort of a steady progression into the legal world, hasn't it? I mean, right from certainly from your uni days, and what point did it become your vision, your dream to be a solicitor, a legal person, or whatever it is, a partner within the legal world?
That is a very good question. I think I went to university thinking I'll do economics because I thought business, you know, that's quite useful, that's quite practical. I'll learn about that. And I started doing economics, and then, you know, enjoyed that, but bits of it were quite mathematical and quite numeric, and that was fine. And then I started doing a bit of law alongside it, and I found that came a little bit easier. Now, whether that's about talking and writing and arguing and all the things that my parents will tell you I've been doing for a very long time, it sort of flowed a bit better, and I sort of felt a bit more comfortable with that. And so gradually twisted the degree to sort of became a law degree. And I think from there, you kind of almost make a choice not to then carry on down that track. You have to do 2 years training on the job, which is where you're a trainee. You go to law school before that. So it's, you sort of, once you're in that path, you sort of, if you can be lucky enough to get yourself a training contract and get yourself a sort of, you know, a job at the end of the law school career track, then you're very lucky. But I mean, law's recognizing that it traditionally had a bit of a red brick university law school training contract path. It's making some very good strides now about getting people in from who haven't come through that qualification. They've come through what's called Silex, which is a chartered legal executives. And you can qualify as a solicitor despite not having law degrees, not having training contracts. You can come through basically by learning on the job. And typically these people tend to be much more well-rounded and practical and, you know, massive contributors. So yeah, look, I think law is sort of gradually trying to sort of broaden its access, you know, which is exactly right, and, you know, generate more diversity in the profession, and also non-lawyers, you know, try and work with people who are not thinking about law. They're thinking about industry and thinking about, you know, commerciality, and they've got real world experience rather than the inside of a law library. Although I don't remember seeing that too often.
So it's Suits and Meghan Markle is all true.
Suits and Meghan, entirely. Yeah, I have an enormous office with basketballs. The thing where they always pour themselves a scotch before a meeting. I love that. You know, that's
how cool is that? I mean, it just doesn't get any better, right?
It's never happened. Although that's not true. We are in our Belfast office. They have a meeting room called the Bushmills Suite. And I believe, though I've not been proven, there is somewhere a couple of vintage bottles tucked away in the Bushmills suite. But otherwise, not really. The other thing about suits is that they're all not quite as cool as us. Just to make that really clear.
Well, absolutely, Chris. In the little time that I've been getting to know you, it's clear that you're far more cool and educated and sophisticated than Harvey. It just is no competition.
I like to think that. I mean, I think self-confidence is a key thing for us all to have. What I would like, if I could pick anything from Suits, though, I love the fact that whenever they give them a little blue folder and they go, look, everything's changed, and they open it for about 4 seconds and go, right, and I now understand everything that was in that report. So the ability to basically download the blue folder directly into the brain in about 4 seconds would be amazing. Everything else they can keep.
You may find it's the Scotch doing that. Perhaps it's something that you need to adopt into your daily life. But for those who are just listening to Chris here, some of you could be watching on screen, but you may just be listening. Chris has always had this kind of real world experience, but mixed with a wonderful humour. And it makes those difficult subjects much easier to palette when you're working together on tough projects. And we were just reminiscing about this before we pressed record, but we met back in easily 2017, probably 2018. And it struck me then that somebody like you is out there, and I consider you to be a true pioneer of our industry because of the work that you've done behind the scenes that nobody will ever know about because it's all top secret and highly exciting. But that sort of renewable piece, the solar, the energy, the infrastructure, and then, of course, what you needed me for was the EV. You already had a stronghold in Fertansity because of you, but now Shoesmiths has benefited from all that experience and making sure that you're delivering even more. And I met Shoesmiths a while ago and I was learning about their OEM input and also the heavier infrastructure side. And as partner, what's your specialism now?
It's still what it was really, which is the mix between renewable energy, clean tech and future mobility. So for a firm that's really strong in all three of those areas, it was a sort of no-brainer for me to come and join along. And actually working closely with people that you spoke to a year ago, Sarah, and Robin Webb was there. And I think sort of allying that sort of energy tech, energy sustainability practice with a massive automotive practice as well, it gives access to sort of people who really are at the front end of change, particularly in a really quiet news week like last week.
I totally get that, and people work with people, and that's why you've always been so popular, and you will do so well with and for Shoesmiths and all of your clients. But I really want to know, because I don't think I've ever really answered you this, where did it start for you, your interest in renewables and solar and storage and now EV? It's quite a span of years.
Quite a span of years.
Years.
2010, 2011. I think around that sort of time, then solar was just really getting going in the UK, and at that point working in Bristol, and quite a lot of the projects are in Devon and Cornwall because it's theoretically sunnier. So the early sort of gold rush of solar projects is in the southwest, and Bristol is a sort of hub of legal services, was very well placed to do that. So the firm I was at the time, Burgess Salmon, were really sort of deeply into that. And I think in truth, I was sort of almost watching some of this happening rather than being involved and thinking, oh, crikey, that looks exciting. I'd really like to be involved in that. And so when the opportunity came to move to Fertansity in 2012, we were just sort of riding that crest of that excitement about big solar projects. And I think that's where it all kicked off. And what I quickly realized was not only was it doing legal work on projects that actually I thought were doing some good, we were doing the right thing, we were going to be on the right side of history. But I increasingly realized that the people involved in that industry, and the same as the EV industry, it's the right kind of people. It's the kind of people that I like. They're all pretty passionate. They're all quite driven. They're quite entrepreneurial. They like change. Rebel's a strong word, but they like to push against the status quo. And it's that kind of people that I love working with. And I've been really, really lucky enough to work with over the last sort of 10, 12 years, and really get inspired by those kind of folk. They come in with an idea. They come in with, a vision. They want to make things better, probably make some money while we're doing it, but also, they don't take no. If they get kicked back, they'll go again. And I think that's that quality, that tenacity, allied with that passion and the vision, means you just get some really inspiring and let's face it, really downright lovely folk. So I think I'm super lucky to be able to work with people in an industry where I'm proud to tell my kids what I did during the day. I really enjoy the company that we get to keep. And the people that you meet, I've built lifelong friendships off the back of doing things together, and I think for me that makes me one of the luckier people in the world. And you know, I think if anything, it's just more case of, you know, redoubling our efforts to make sure that, you know, we do the right thing in the right way for the right people, but the message gets out. You know, I think communications, this is what makes your platform so important. You know, we've got an election coming that's going to be fought on all manner of wedge issues, and you know, we need to just be continually pushing the message out that, you know, this is the right thing to do. It's not going to be a bad thing. It's good for you, everybody. and I think that's the single biggest challenge that we have, particularly in this country, but also in places like the US. You know, the messaging and the reach of our communities just has to expand and expand and expand. You know, and you guys are doing a great job, but we have to go further and faster.
And I agree with that. I mean, you know, whatever we take away from the speech from last week, what Sunak chose to do was just abdicate all kind of leadership and just allow the false impressions to remain. So the ban on petrol and diesel vehicles is lifted. Well, it was never actually in place. You know, and it's simple. But I was curious, and I would just want to echo everything that you've said, actually, first and foremost, because it is a real treat to be in this market, and there are so many great people doing so many great things with lots of challenge, lots of money having to be raised, and all of those kinds of things. But the interesting thing for me about what you were saying there was really having to do things for the first time in a legal framework. So sort of setting some precedents. I mean, we had the big legal precedent with Ella's law, potentially, you know, that human right to air quality. And obviously that's really, really high profile and very dramatic. But what are you seeing within the legal frameworks that are having to change, are changing? Is the legal framework fit for purpose, or are we having to do things very, very differently in order to support this transition?
I think there's no legal framework itself is what it is. Until somebody tries to take us out of the Convention on Human Rights, we're kind of, you know, the law is always moving, and energy, mobility, transport, heating, they're political playthings, and so the law will always react. I think what we see now is the pace of change accelerating, and every industry will tell you that. But I think in our industry, there's new ideas and new structures and new opportunities coming to the market all the time. And I think for us, it's the ability to think a little bit creatively and not be constrained by what we did 2 years ago on something similar, or not being able to say, I think lawyers, when they get a bit stuck, will quite often say, but this is market, meaning this is what we think everybody ought to be doing, and this is what everyone did before, and this is what we'll accept because we're familiar with it. Now, they may be right, and that may be true, but quite often we're talking about something where there isn't really any sort of market yet. You know, you've got to try and think a little bit outside the box. We saw it on the energy side, particularly. We had it with something like battery storage, which a lot of people went from solar deals into battery storage and expected to carry a lot of that thinking straight through, and it simply wasn't transferable. And again, with EVs, you know, everyone's sort of got an idea of how we roll out infrastructure and how we roll out tech, but that only worked for the last person that wanted to do it that way. You know, the next person is thinking about doing something different, or making it faster, making it go quicker, making it easier, and, you know, making it more efficient. So I think that it's reacting to the pace of change, or being part of the change, you know, being part of the lawyers being on the front foot saying, right, okay, you, Mr. and Mrs. Client, have got a great plan. We'd love to help you do it. Have you thought about this? Can we make it better for you? Can we save you time? Can we save you money? And I think those are the kind of lawyers that will really make an impact in this space, because things are moving quickly, you know, and you can't be thinking the same way you did 5 years ago because you haven't got time.
I really love how disruptive you are in this market. And I love that this is market phrase. I've not heard that before. And you leading the team is definitely going to make things happen faster. I was wondering, with your sort of tenacity and vision and commitment to this disruptive behaviour, not really taking no for an answer if something was done before but didn't work well, you've just got to find a better way of doing it under the banner of collaboration.
I mean, it's
and
also
innovation.
The definition of madness, isn't it? So there's a fine line, but
Well, I think so, but I do wonder where you get that tenacity from. I know you well. I know that you are a sporting man. Where do you feel you've pulled that tenacity and commitment through to your career from? Is it the sport? Is it the family? What happens?
That's a really good question. I think family, we're always encouraged to keep going. I think there's a certain, you know, if things don't come first time and straight away, and I'm sure actually as a kid, particularly as a teenager, there will be occasions where I was a bit grumpy that something didn't come off in the way that you like straight away. And I think, you know, that's always a strong message to get, that, you know, nothing worth doing is worth doing badly. And anyway, I got that wrong. You've got to keep going. I think, you know, I played a lot of sport. That does help, you know, literally sport where you get knocked over a lot. And like the Chumbawamba song, you've just got to have a whiskey drink and get back up again. So, possibly.
And a vodka drink. And a cider drink.
And a lager drink.
And a lager drink. Yeah. Sounds like a Saturday night out with the Shoesmiths crew.
It's certainly how rugby used to be when I was playing it. when I was talking about that tenacity, to be honest, I'm talking more about the clients that you work with rather than me. I mean, we're lucky to be sort of dragged along by that tenacity and that energy. And in a sense, you know, we gradually absorb it, I think, is the way. So I think I've been inspired by their approach to business and to life and to, you know, things that get in the way, like policy and governments and slowness and bureaucracy and, you know, and then things that you can't really predict, like, you know, warfare and global supply chains and inflationary crisis and all these things that everybody has to deal with when you're trying to get something through. And I think, you know, being a CEO of a fast growth company in this space in EV or mobility or renewable energy, I think takes an amazing sort of person, you know, and to then make a success of it and then spread that message in a way that, you know, people really go along with you on that journey. You know, the Toddingtons of this world, the Adrian Keynes, the, you know, Mel Shufflebothams, people who are just really setting the agenda. I think it takes a massive amount of resilience. And I think that's an underrated quality for all of us in trying to do what we do. But I confess my resilience is off the back of others rather than probably driven by me.
You say that, Chris, but it feels to me that you have a degree. I mean, so, like, I'm guessing the sport you're referring to, I think you did mention rugby, but there's a mindset that comes with playing rugby, having played it in my youth a little bit. But there's a mindset, there's that determination, that sporting passion. I mean, winding back right as early as you like, how did that come about? Because it's certainly serving you well, you know, with that passion. I mean, I can see a guitar in the background, so there's obviously a bit of a musical thing going on somewhere as well. What are the passions that drive Chris?
Need for attention, mainly. hence the musical thing. I think that, I mean, I grew up in Wales, so the rugby and music is sort of like national
service. You have my sympathy.
Today it's a good day to be Welsh this morning for.
Yes, no, absolutely hammered Australia. I loved that. I did. Yes.
And for any of your Welsh audiences, obviously every day is a good day to be Welsh, but particularly today. what are the passions? I do like, you know, I do like things that are new and shiny, and that's a good quality. I mean, it can be a sort of something I have to work on, where you kind of, you know, you and hence this area of law and industry is really exciting because there's so much happening. And I think sometimes that's a real strength, and it gets you towards the cutting edge and as doing things for the first time and, you know, meeting those change makers. It's also a weakness that I do continually have to work on, where, you know, you sort of get involved with something and then something else comes in and you sort of magpie over there. And I think that's, so it's a strength and a weakness. And I think recognizing that, but I think I do, I'm excited by new stuff. And that certainly drives me. I also, as you say, I love music. I mean, from a rugby point of view, it's the people you played rugby with. It's a lifetime band and brothers things. We can't go raid other people's villages nowadays, but we can play rugby and we can stand, you know, shoulder to shoulder on the line. And I think that's really important. So I'm, you know, really love being part of that team. But I also like doing a job that I can be a bit creative and I can be, you know, a little bit arty from time to time, you know, and sometimes that comes out in overt ways, like, you know, wrapping your opening speech at a conference. And sometimes it's just that, you know, need to brainstorm with interesting people and finding that exchange of ideas quite fun. So I think, you know, new things, ability to be creative, and actually just working side by side with people that you really like, you know, and I think those are, that's what's come from rugby and music as part of my DNA.
Wonderful.
There was an amazing musical moment at a staff party, I seem to recall, where there was some band. I think everybody had to sing Christmas songs on the stage in Wales. Maybe you want to forget that. I don't forget that. I do remember that very fun Christmas party.
Well, I think that was actually, I think that was me singing, can't remember my name. Darn it. Anyway.
Oh, don't worry, I've got it on video for anybody that ever wants to see it. So it's fine.
We'll put it out on Instagram later.
Yeah. I mean, as a rule of thumb, you know, middle-aged bald men singing songs by well-known female divas is not normally a recipe for success. But
while
dressed
as alpine people, I seem to remember lots of very strange outfits that evening.
I think I was in a kilt. I think you were dressed as a milkmaid, I think. Yeah.
I think, isn't there a saying, what goes on the Christmas party should really stay in the Christmas party?
Comes out on a podcast.
That's absolutely right,
exactly.
But there's also a what goes on anywhere near Sarah ends up on Instagram. So.
That's very true too, I can't disagree with that.
But I was thinking about your magpie comment about liking things that are shiny and new, and I'm very glad that there was a moment in our knowing each other that you were very interested in the Evie Cafe. You have been a long supporter, and it is with huge personal thanks that I say that. And it was really nice being interviewed last week at 6 months on from the Women of the Year Award, and they said to me, who has been influential in your life, in your career, who's your motivation, inspiration, blah blah blah. And I've only known you for a short period of our work life, and in that time you are definitely one of those people who you can bank on. You will support people, you will lift people up, and you've always been a big supporter of what I would call collaboration, which for us is so integral and core to the Evie Cafe. And you're saying as well, spotting the new things, being creative. I'm still annoyed that Edith likes your music on my Apple subscription. It does occasionally come up, and it does not fit in with my Eastern European dance music vibe. So generally, I have to think about your interactions more than I would, thanks to her. But I want to thank you really genuinely. And that I wanted to ask you, a time last week when everyone was really sort of shook by what happened, and this doubling down effort that you referred to, what are you going to do now as a result of next week? I'm first to say nothing. I'm unapologetic about my determination in this role at the moment, making sure that EV charging is as simple as possible. But what about you? Because your remit's much broader.
Yeah, what am I going to do differently? It's a really good question. I haven't probably got my head quite around that yet, but it was an amazing week because I was lucky enough to be at the SMMT conference on Monday, which was, I think, 2 days before. So to hear, what I was really pleased to hear there is most of the OEMs, and I think some of them will sort of secretly be happier than they're admitting, but broadly the amount of investment already gone on, the enthusiasm and the direction was very clear. You know, they were saying, well, we're not for turning, I think was the message quite strongly. Now, it's not all of them, but the majority were very much behind the EV transition. And they saw that as the direction that they wanted to go in. So I sort of already had that slightly more reassuring backdrop before we went into Wednesday, whereupon we just had a sort of working group meeting in the office, and we put the telly on and then just sort of shouted at it. So it was quite good fun to watch it in company and just, you know, have a little bit of solidarity. I think what we're going to do differently, I think, is just be prepared to stand firm on calling out the fear and unlearned doubt. I think, you know, I think as lawyers, we're sometimes a little bit afraid to get off the fence. I think it's one of the things people sort of criticize lawyers for. It's not because we're indecisive, it's because we like to see both sides of an argument. We like to weigh things up, and we like to try and listen to everybody's points of view. And look, when it comes to this, I don't care about that at all. There is one point of view, there is one truth. You know, if you're going to decarbonize this country, heating, transport, and energy efficiency are no-brainers. And Rishi went after all three of those in his speech. You know, we're framed in the basis that this will cost you, the ordinary person, money, more so than the, you know, mortgage crisis or the inflationary pressures and everything else. So that for me is not a, that's not a sort of, you know, I'm not worried about picking sides with that one. I think particularly trying to save money off people's energy bills, don't scrap the energy efficiency task force, don't, you know, scrap the ability to make landlords create housing that isn't, you know, isn't energy inefficient and put all the bills on the tenants. I think it's all slightly unforgivable. So I think what we do is within the sort of it's just really trying to lead by example. And going to give a slight plug for Shoesmiths now, because one of the things that I've really been impressed by is we have a sustainability lead who has done fantastic work to get our targets, near and short-term targets, approved by the SBTi. So we've got science-based targets which have been validated. And again, you know, we're not the world's biggest emitter, but actually it's really important that we lead by example and we're able to sort of help and also take some of that expertise out to other people and just try and spread the word and try and do the right thing. It's actually a phrase Sarah used quite a lot, and it's from Frozen 2. It's all about doing the next right thing. And I do often think of that.
Do you sing it though in your head?
It's
a great track, and it's got a lot of morals, that movie.
Look, you could probably learn most of what you need to know from life from the Frozen movies.
That or Forrest Gump, in my opinion. But
that or Forrest Gump. And Top Gun. No. less so these days. So that is a woolly sort of rambling answer. The answer is, I think, just being a little bit clearer about, you know, what we think the direction ought to be, not whinging about what it isn't. And also, I think, really looking to industry to set the pace. And I think the next colleagues put a post on one of my, a comment on one of my posts earlier last week to say, look, I think industry are going to set these targets. And I think they're going to be the ones delivering those targets, and the public will be along for that. And I think that's sense of optimism I do have, in that I think corporate strategies are already pointing the way they should be. Now, it's always good to be kicked along the way, but I think that's what business are doing. That's what shareholders are going to want to see. That's what the consumers are going to want to demand. And I do think a sort of very, very vocal minority is influencing policy direction at the moment. And I think a bold approach. Somebody, I remember being at COP26 in the back of a cab, and the taxi driver was talking about net zero and in that brand of Glaswegian wisdom. And he said, look, everyone whinged when the smoke ban came in for about 3 weeks. And then we all got on with it. Nobody cares. He just tells us what to do, we'll get on with it. Nobody cares. You know, it was quite an interesting analogy to draw, and at the time it was sort of the end of the world for the pub trade. And then, you know, a short amount of time later, it was, everyone got on with it and it probably made things better. So yeah, I think we have to be bold. We have to be bold with regulation and not sort of kowtow to what Twitter says the day after.
Twitter, yeah, the topical barometer of nonsense, second only to Facebook, I think. It's really interesting to hear you say some really pivotal words there about being bold and sort of being a leader. And actually, you are an influential person. And I think this always falls onto us as individual people within our industry to know your craft. Know what you can do to make a difference and drive things forward. And it makes a very peaceful sleep at night when you know that you've done everything that you can. And I think what people don't get about law firms, and it certainly took me a while when I joined, was you guys are actually shaping the future of people's businesses from within. You're stopping people from making stupid mistakes, and you're helping drive them forward to a place that's more profitable, more ethical, more sustainable, more protected, and therefore more well-rounded. And I'm sure all those people who you very politely name-dropped earlier would do the same for you if they got to work for you. Well, I just think it's important that you hear that.
That's very kind. Keep going. Sometimes when you're shouting at the telly, you think, oh, well, I should be out marching, I should be out doing protest. And I saw, you know, Chris Packham's documentary in the week about, is it time to break the law? Well, obviously can't condone that, but we are at that point. You know, people do need to, the message has to come across. And, you know, and I think, you know, it's a very fine line between losing the public mandate and public support, and I don't know what the answer is to that, but I do find myself thinking, oh, you know, God, I really just want to get out and shout at people. Should I be a politician? Should I go and protest? And I think increasingly, as Sarah says, look, I mean, the way I can influence things and try and push things on it is from what I'm doing. It's probably where I'm going to have the most impact. So, you know, until that changes, it's probably the right place to be. But I think we can just be a little bit more, you know, a little bit more stronger and come off the fence a bit more often.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, if I don't think we've been on the fence, but I think we've given government probably more slack than we should have, given their recent announcements. And, I, you know, interesting, you were in SMMT on Monday. I was in the BVRLA Fleets in Charge on the Wednesday, and we all watched it together.
Oh, right.
Melanie Shufflebotham was literally on the panel on stage beneath the screen where we were listening and watching
Rishi what Sunak. Should have been done in Parliament first, but yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, the fact is that none of these people have been, voted in for however long. You know, we've had the debacle of Liz Truss. We've had this debacle number two. And you begin to question what can we do? And I think you've hit the nail on the head there in terms of we can just double down and keep going and work harder and deliver on this anyway. You mentioned the manufacturers earlier, like Ford came out with a big statement. Very, very rare for Ford to go absolutely abjectly on the record as they did. Similarly, Stellantis as a group, so you've got five big brands there that a majority of EV, but no surprise that 2028 they're going to be 100% EV in Vauxhall. 2030 they're going to be 100% EV across all of their brands, which is their statement. If they change that, that'll be really interesting. But I don't expect them to. A lot of investment in Halewood and Ellesmereport and all those places. And it really is time to double down. So, you know, with that in mind, you're focused on renewable energy and green tech and all of, you know, this whole future thing. Where do you see the biggest innovation required? My personal view, that kind of whole piece around energy, getting energy into the right place, energy independence, and you referred to that sort of watering down of clear direction. Where do you see it being in the coming sort of 3 to 5 years?
I think I've got a fairly clear view of that, and I think it's not easy. It's not an easy challenge to crack. I mean, particularly for the UK, you know, we clearly need to shift towards more renewable energy without any doubt. But we have a very old system that was built and regulated around 14 enormous coal-fired power stations. And we're still really in the process of realizing that we're sort of transforming that into something that is potentially millions and millions of little power stations all sort of contributing and feeding into itself. So you imagine the kind of digital architecture of that is to revolutionize that is huge. And EVs, I mean, not just cars, but when you look at buses and HGVs, is an enormous part of that ecosystem. So the revolution to that is moving away from is decentralization of energy management, which is enormous and has a huge amount of benefit for the system. Because again, if we don't have to make as much energy, if it's all being used locally and it's not being shipped around the country all over the place, it's obviously more efficient. We can balance supply and demand. I think the energy markets themselves and the sort of the model of you know, big six energy suppliers is there for disruption, and it's been very hard. The barriers to entry have been really, really high, and a lot of those are regulatory, but some of them are things like data, things like availability of having data to look at and to create a case from. And it's been I have been lucky enough to be part of some of those programs to try and make that accessibility of data and data sharing much more prevalent. So I think I would love to see, more availability of information, more not just making available, make it usable for other people. That's the kind of, you know, making usable, actionable data that is available for people to innovate and to create new solutions. Fail if they have to, fail fast and go again. But I think the biggest. Yeah, if I had to sort of sum it up, I think the whole an EV is very much part of this ecosystem right at the edge of the grid. It's moving from this kind of spine of old-fashioned thermal infrastructure to, you know, millions upon millions of energy power stations and all feeding in to a system that is infinitely more complicated than it was 60 years ago. That's an enormous change.
Yeah, and it's a fantastic vision. I constantly, whenever I'm talking to groups of people, of course, we're dealing with some real challenges in the world of vans at this minute, and of course, leading into commercial vehicles. It's going to be a bigger problem if everybody wants to jump from cars to larger commercial vehicles. We need to solve the van problem along the way. But every time I speak, I'm always minded to remind people that innovation is coming, is really coming fast and thick and furious. You mentioned about the pace of change, and I think I've mentioned this before. Justin Trudeau is one of my favorite sayings, and I've probably mentioned it at least three times on podcasts, but he said the pace of change has never been as fast, but it will never be as slow again. And I love that kind of idea of kind of perpetual change and innovation. Are you seeing anything in particular coming down the pipe that you think, wow, that is good? I mean, you might be bound by NDAs and all that kind of malarkey, but is there anything that you see on the horizon that's really going to kind of, ooh, that's game changing?
Yeah. Well, let me tell you what isn't, for my first point. And because there's a fine line between going, innovation is coming, which it is, and then if your governments and certain types of industry saying, but it's okay because technology will magically appear and solve everything. Okay, so that is an easy fallback for some in some industry that says it's okay, technology magic will come and will solve carbon overnight. So I think we have to be a little bit mindful of that. In terms of what's coming, though, I mean, what I really, really like is some of it's simple stuff like graphite and graphene, you know, making cabling that's super efficient and isn't copper and doesn't get nicked. I mean, it sounds like a small thing, but I was talking to someone the other day telling us about how they could basically create, you know, artificially made graphite for use in cabling. And that sounds like a small thing, but it could be utterly transformational. That's one thing. I'm very, very excited about the ability for people and businesses. I mean, start with small businesses to buy and sell electricity from local generators, not with an arrangement between them, but with a marketplace in the middle. And we're looking at that at the moment, where that makes sense. You know, if you are making widgets in Bradford and you want to buy power from, you know, two or three different solar plants in Yorkshire, you know, that should be really easy, and it's cheap, and it's local. It's being, you know, used locally. It's being generated locally. That creates a huge amount of efficiency, huge amounts of value for people making renewables. It's predictable, and you know, it's a hedge against energy price rises for those businesses who have found it really, really, really hard over the last, you know, 2-3 years particularly. So it's that again. It comes back to my theme about things being done in their local area. You know, if you buy electricity that's generated locally, that is cheaper and more efficient and better, and everybody makes more money. So that sounds really simple as an idea. It is, but actually, as a sort of fighting your way through numerous layers of regulation, that's quite tricky. But again, it's an inspiring thing. I remember what I can mention at the company. They're called, one of them called Urban Chain, who are operating out of Manchester, and again, just watching what they do is really inspiring. Just ability to create marketplaces for businesses and generators and just bring them together is fantastic. So I quite like that. It's quite prosaic. It's not silver bullet. It's doing taking a simple idea and scaling it across an industry to create, you know, huge amounts of value and you know, deliver social change at the same time. So I'm
amazing.
There's good stuff out there, you know, but I don't think we need to wait for magic to solve everything. It's the stuff is there, the tools are there. You know, if someone can get on with fusion, yes, that will help immeasurably. And that I think is on the way. I think keeping the right balance of innovation, but not using that as an excuse to not use tech that's already here.
Exactly. Yeah, I really thoroughly agree. Sarah.
Got there in the end.
Yeah, innovation as well. Innovation can be, I've heard innovation described as a distraction, as not being commercially viable, and as you've just said, potentially an excuse. Oh, we don't have quite the right technology out there. And I must say, something I really love about our industry, I hope that you'll echo this sentiment, is we're about to go into what I call silly season. So there are numerous awards going on out there between now and Christmas. Amazing events coming up like EV World Congress, Fleet and Mobility Live, London EV shows on my radar as well.
Transport,
where are you
going
to be going?
I'll
be there as well. Transport and Energy is a great one. That's November.
Where are we? the beauty of having a bigger team is that we're, it doesn't all have to be me, but I will be out and about, I think, Solar and Storage Live, which also has charged EV, will be there. I think the Evening of Transport and Energy Forum, as it is. We've got actually a number of events we're hosting on sort of energy topics. We've also got a number of our own, so we've got sort of EV roundtables where we're looking at not just talking about EVs because everyone's doing that. It's really looking at honing in on a particular type of industry and saying, look, how does this affect you? So it might be, for example, our, you know, house builders saying, you know, what are you looking at? How does this affect you? What are you really concerned about? And similarly, our tech team have got a completely different view of this as how mobility solutions and EV solutions play into their market. So, yeah, really, really wanting to get under the skin of it and just seeing how a wide range of businesses are sort of grappling with it. And some are, you know, for some it's core business, others it's something that they then have to think about and they don't know where to start. So there's a big spectrum of, you know, ways in which we can have a really useful conversation. So, sort of combination of external events and things we're running ourselves. But again, thankfully, there's a lot of appetite at the firm to really, you know, bring people together and exchange useful ideas. And some of them will be sort of, you know, we can talk about, some of them will be Chatham House rules, and those will be the really interesting ones. You know?
Yeah, and I've already put my hand up, but even just today, there's been a very topical discussion about what happens when a payment terminal goes down and whose fault is that? And the bottom line is no one cares. The poor driver didn't get their energy.
Yeah.
And one of the reasons I do the role I do now is I see a very disruptive opportunity to make meaningful change in the payment sector. So if I can contribute my time, I absolutely would love to start lifting the lid on how better to wind the clock back and look at how you can procure services and be more in control of what you end up with as your incumbent supply chain when you put charges in the ground. And something that you're very good at and I'd like to lend my hand to is disseminating what's otherwise quite complicated information. And innovation is always complicated. There's always multiple layers and multi-party interests. And it's about understanding what the aim is and encouraging people to go along for the ride on that. And then your world's even more complicated because you've got to work out how to do it, how to make it commercially viable, how to protect them as they go through as your partner. I personally want to make sure this is a long-term friendship. EV Cafe welcomes everybody who's willing to put their head above the parapet and make positive change.
Excellent.
Absolutely. And so, Chris, with that in mind, with the future in mind, and we've talked about a lot of innovation and you know, possibly some barriers. You know, obviously we know that the legal statement or the government statement last week hasn't helped us, but it's not going to hinder us either. What magic wand time, if you were able to kind of just, you know, sprinkle a bit of magic dust across the landscape as you see it, what would be the thing that would change or go away or come into practice that would enable the future from your perspective? It doesn't have to be even green energy. It could be you want new house.
I'm not going to step wildly out of line here, but I think the problem is grid connections, whether it's for EV charging or renewable energy. That's the biggest problem. Everyone knows it is. You know, things are underway to try and deal with it, but at the moment, that is the bottleneck. I think the planning system is under-resourced. So whilst I wouldn't say, clearly I'd be favouring of a more permissive planning landscape for renewables and EV, you know, and depot development, infrastructure development on, you know, for logistics and things. So I think that has to happen. But ultimately, I think the part of the problem at the minute is just there aren't enough people to actually carry out the planning authority's function. And I think that's a real problem for the net zero transition, whichever way you look at it. I think I would like to, I don't know what the answer to this I think is, but try to find ways of not getting annoyed by the amount of made-up articles in certain sections of the press. And just try to, I mean, I admire the people and you guys are amongst them who just, you know, and Dan Caesar always amuses me because he just has this relentless energy to keep countering, keep going again. Roger Atkins does the same. You guys do the same. I just get too angry to do it, but that keeps plugging away, keep fact checking, keep, you know, or being one of those people on what was Twitter and X who says, you know, the community have fact checked this and turns out it's not true. And I think that's what we need at enormous scale. We need our own bot farms of truth, you know, one of that is. And I think it needs to come away from that, you know, it needs to not be a culture war, it needs to be away from we are the however Suella put it, the tofu eating wokerati, because that's you know, I'm a, you know, fully paid up member of that, but it's not, it's just about, you know, driver experience, it's about convenience, it's about driving great cars, it's about making financial sense. Again, you know, Richie's statement, yes, it's hugely disappointing from a net zero thing. I don't think it's going to stop the momentum. It'll wobble it a bit. But ultimately, you know, talking about the economics of it, let's talk about what financial sense building a British manufacturing base in green infrastructure is going to be. You know, what are the investment opportunities? What are the green jobs? What are the skills developments? And again, that's the commentary that cuts through. Even if you happen to be, I mean, even if you're a climate denier, you can't deny the millions, the billions of investment, the millions of jobs and the economic opportunities. So there's nothing in there that makes economic sense. So I think it's sort of trying to, whilst retaining our passion and enthusiasm, dialing that down, and that just going back with the really, the facts that cut through, whatever they are. And I think sometimes, you know, I remember this phrase when we were talking about probably the Trump campaign back in 2015, 2016, and they would say, look, the Republicans know this is a knife fight and the Democrats are kind of bringing oven gloves. It's almost like you have to kind of, you know, sometimes scale up the message. Yeah. And try and get it to cut through. And I don't, you know, I wouldn't say employ the same tactics, but that relentless message time and time and time again, you know, the Cambridge Analytica, let's drop the message into people's feeds, you know, and it's always going to be one way. You know, I'm not sure the sort of industry side of the argument is quite as sophisticated as that.
Yeah.
So are you saying that you want your magic dust to be some kind of amazing truth machine?
Yes.
That can, yes.
I mean, also. Yeah, there it is. There isn't one. I mean, that's a real problem in the world, isn't it? I mean, so much misinformation. What do we have? We have Bellingcat, you know, and a series of journalists and you know, trying to crowdsource truth from, you know, people's phones all over the world. We don't have many of those. You know, we have a lot of agencies and we have a lot of media outlets owned by people whose interests do not align necessarily with, you know, the wider social good. So, yeah, I would love to see more of that kind of ability to bring, you know, real-time information together from people on the ground, witnesses on the ground, to create something that you can verify as a point of truth. And as Bellingcat have been doing this for things like war crimes, where they have been able to cut through the propaganda and actually just deliver evidence, you know, and I think we need that more than ever. And you know, they live dangerous lives, and I think they're amazing people. So more of that would be.
So we've started out with decent people to come in and do our planning to the, you know, kind of researching war crimes and calling out governments and people like that. But I agree with all of that. I just, the question that I'm left with is, how do we make planning sexy so that people want to join it? Because it's like, it wouldn't be my first choice.
That's a really good question. I don't know. Probably pay it well. I think it's probably the, maybe sell it. It's probably right up there with, yeah, that's a really good question. How do you make it sexy? Because
I don't think you should. Like, I'm being surrounded by town planners, urban planners, countryside planners, everything planner. The whole element of planning is you kind of take the fun out of it. Everything has to be decided before you even begin. So if you start trying to make that all glamorous, what I think would be better is making it appealing. So like you say, pay better or use inspirational figureheads who can show that even though their job is very, very rigid and very, very strict and rule abiding, it doesn't have to be. You could have some kind of Google style slide in your office and scotch before a meeting.
There you go.
That's probably a right idea.
Sarah's got it. She's wrapped it up. Chris, listen, this has been a fascinating conversation, and it's one that I know that we could carry on, and I think, you know, your insight, your mind for the future, and really the way to focus on your area of expertise is really, really refreshing, and it's nice that creativity and that determination that from rugby and music has sort of come and been brought to bear in the way that it has. Really, really value your time today. What thought would you like to leave us with? What is it? What would you tell all of it? I mean, we kind of heard it in the truth. The magic fairy dust or whatever you want to call it. But what thought would you like to leave us with?
It's probably that my PR team are going to kill me after this goes out. And if that's, you know, probably what thought? Only that we should all make sure we stick together and all try harder. But we're not going to do it by ourselves. We need communities, you know, and this is why EV Cafe, since, you know, that very first time it went out during lockdown, was we created what people want, which was that sense of, you know, you inform, you entertain, you make people laugh, but you give people sense of, right, we're all in this together. It's that solidarity thing. So I think just, you know, finding the right people, sticking with them, and then going harder.
Fantastic. I love that. What about you, Saz?
Well, what I've taken from you is that you're this courage, not for turning, you said earlier, you're not for turning. And as a result of last week's, whatever that was, you're going to encourage people to get off the fence more often and be more sort of true to your beliefs, and also kind of keep everybody focused on that, what I call scalable, ethical business creation, because that's the only truth you're ever going to have, is you knowing that you're doing something positive, not just for now, but for a legacy and a future, and asking for help with that, because if we all did it on our own, John Curtis says we need to hold hands and run in the same direction, but that's all a bit lemming-like to me, so I'd rather just walk.
Well, do you know what? For me, I kind of take what both of you have said there, what it tells me is I am... If I'm an expert at all in a very small aspect of this whole transition, and I know nothing about law, I know nothing about changing law or developing contracts and structures that can drive success. I'm hoping you do, Chris.
So looking like I do, that's the key point.
Absolutely, that's perfect. But you touched on it, collaboration and community, bringing together, because, you know, let's take a rugby team. You know, there are two props. There's a hooker, there's a flanker, there's, you know, people in the line, there's a scrum half, a fly half, and a fullback. And we all play different roles on the pitch, and we all have different skills. Certainly a fly half will never be a hooker, never be a prop. And, you know, there are certain things that I will never be able to do, and law is almost certainly one of those things. But I'll play my part, you play your part, Saz plays her part, and we all move forward together, and that's the community that will make the change that we all want, isn't it?
Beautiful. Rugby analogies, perfect place to end.
Yeah, absolutely. It's almost like Paul's very good at these podcasts.
I try to get at least one sensible thing in every podcast. There we go. That's why I quote somebody else every time. All right, let's get rid of that. But anyway, listen, Chris, thank you so much. And Chris, I know that you're on LinkedIn. For those of you that can see Chris, he looks nothing like his picture. and I'm not going to say whether his picture's better or worse. It's just different.
Different. Yeah.
So please do check him out, Chris Pritchett from Shoesmiths. You'll be able to find him, connect with him, because he is a mine, a wealth of knowledge around this particular area of renewable and, you know, e-mobility and green tech, and will be able to provide tremendous help for you and your business if you need it, I have no doubt. Check back to the EV Cafe for all of our other podcasts, where you can get more insight from the other pioneers, collaborators, and innovators in our industry. And hopefully, we can all, in John's words, join hands together and run forward. Saz, thanks so much for your support today.
My pleasure, as always. Time has flown.
It's been a joy. And Chris, finally, thank you so much. And we look forward to... the next insights that we'll get from you, and we'll definitely be checking out all your events. So head over to the Shoesmiths website for details on the events. I'm sure that they'll be found there somewhere.
Good stuff. Thank you ever so much for having me.
My pleasure. Our pleasure. Thanks, everybody. And until next time, we will see you again soon, and have a great day.